You're listening to DraftKings Network.
You're tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey, none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a Monster Monday presented, as always, by DraftKings. Love those dudes. Love all of you. I'm so pumped up that we're, what, like 10, 11 days away from the NFL draft now, which means you must, like, pretty much mandatory, binge, listen, or watch all the Greg Cosell episodes or all the Emory Hunt college draft episodes. And how about today? Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl. I don't know that anybody knows these guys as well as he does. Let's dive right into it. It's Big Show time.
The Big Show.
Man, I love talking with this guy every year. There are not many more qualified to talk about the NFL draft than Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl. You can check him out on social media at @JimNagy_SB. He's a long-time scout. In fact, I was following him around. He wasn't following me around. We were together in Washington in 01 or 02, and then again in New England. But he's been doing the Senior Bowl thing for a long time now, Jim, and you look like you're getting younger. It looks good on you. It must be going pretty well.
Being off the road 200 nights a year certainly helps. But yeah, Ross, yeah, we were together, man. That's cool. We got that shared past. And I don't know. Have you been watching the Dynasty thing with the Patriots stuff? That brings back a lot of really cool memories.
It's so funny you say that. It's on my to-do list. I have not. It's a long story, but I usually watch something like that if I'm working out. And my TV over here in my exercise room doesn't have Apple on it to be able to watch that. I mean, I could probably watch it on my computer, I guess, because I have it there. But no, I haven't. It's interesting hearing all the negativity that people are not happy with it. I guess I can't really comment on it unless I watch it. But I would say that's probably the more interesting aspect, because people already know about all the wins and all like the championships. So people are probably more curious about that stuff. And the negative, plus, you know, it seems like every time, I always laugh at this, Jim, every time they win a Super Bowl, it just so happens that NFL Films was there the whole year and they have a documentary with like Belichick or McDaniels being like, and that's how I knew by the way his foot was, I knew that I want to see the documentary from last year. I want to see the NFL Films cameras from last year.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't a part of the show. Like, I caught myself in a couple of the practice, you know, sideline clips, just standing there watching you guys practice and all that. And so, again, I know there's people that are pissed that they felt like they were, you know, represented a certain way and all that. It just brought back a lot of good. There was a lot of good memories from those years. You guys won a lot of games. We won a lot of games. So it was fun, but anyway, let's jump into the draft stuff. I derailed us on the Pats.
No, not at all. A lot of people have been talking about that. You know, before we even get into the draft itself, I know you've been going to a lot of pro days, and so you probably know this about me, or you would guess this about me, as knowing what type of player I was. I hate pro days.
Yeah.
I despise pro days. Hey, this is the truth, okay? I had hernia surgery December 7th after my senior year. I had, you know, they call it core muscle surgery now, but I had surgery right up at Rutgers. And back then they were like, hey, 2 months, nothing. So December 7th to February 7th, I did nothing. And then my pro day was at Rutgers like March 3rd, right? Or March 4th. So it's like 3 weeks after I literally was not allowed to do anything for 8 weeks, right? Just let it heal. And my agent, Joe Linta, God bless him, said, you got to go there. Like, it's your only chance for people to see you, and you got to prove that you're healthy after the surgery. So I went there, and I'll never forget, I introduced myself to the Eagles scout, because I grew up a huge Eagles fan outside of Philly. I said, hey, huge Eagles fan, training camp. Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. He was like, happy to talk to me or whatever. Then the drills happened. Then I ran my 40. Then at the end of the pro day, he wouldn't even look at me. Because I know they like to have some local flavor if they can. So if I was even close, he probably would have given me the benefit of the doubt. But he was like, oh, yeah, I can't go to them with a 5.5 40.
Well, I've probably been in that scout's shoes before. But no, I'm with you. Like, I'm not a huge pro day guy myself. To me, as from a scouting perspective, yes, there are some takeaways for sure from the drill work. And, you know, y'all, every team wants to get the numbers because, data comparisons to past years. I saw it as another opportunity to be in that building, talk to more people about the players, and connect with the player himself. You know, when you're a scout and you're going in the building, you know, for a couple of years and asking about players, like, they tell the player story for the player. That's what I tell all our guys at the Senior Bowl. I say, guys, up until this point, up until right now, everyone has been telling your story for you. Now you get a chance to tell your own story. So I used to love to connect, like, Ross, if I liked you as a guy that was going to be a late round free agent level player, like, it was an awesome recruiting time. You know, like, I would have called you before your pro day, like, hey, Ross, I'm going to be at BC. I'll be driving down. Like, I'll probably get in around 7. You want to meet up for dinner? Or, you know, after the pro day, you want to go grab lunch somewhere? Like, pick a local spot. We'll go grab a sandwich and you know, rap a little bit. But that's why I liked him. More so than the on-the-field stuff is just really to try to get to know the players more.
How important do you think that part of it is, Jim, is like the interview process and talking with them? Because I guess in my mind, I feel like they're all going to tell you the right things, right? Like, I love football, you know, it's all I want to do. I almost feel like in that instance, that's where it is more important to talk to the other people in the building. If you can get them to tell you the truth, okay, when does he really get here? When does he leave? Like, how much does he care about school versus football? Like, how do you stay away from these guys being so coached up?
For sure. It's all like interviewing techniques. That's the thing. Like, scouts, we're not trained interviewers, right? Like, I've actually sought out some people in that space to get better at that over the years. You're right. I mean, you have to trust the people in the building, and that's why sources at the building, that's why you have to work so hard at those relationships, because the people at the schools aren't going to shoot all 32 scouts that come through the same way. You know, so in order to get the real info, right, we're all looking for the real stuff. You have to work hard at those relationships, and they matter. And yes, are players all going to say they love football? For the most part, they all are. But to me, it was like, I want to drill down, like, where they came from. Tell me about, like, our big thing in Seattle with Coach Carroll was, what adversity have you overcome? Like, talk to me about, like, something hard you've been through and how you got through it. Things like that. That's to me. And then I do think over time, you sit with a guy for a half hour, like, you can feel the genuine, you know, how genuinely into it he really is. And again, like, and I called it like recruiting, because that's really what it becomes. I know your phone is probably ringing off the hook after the draft. I never BS players, man. Like, I would never be like, well, yeah, well, I think you'll go in the 5th round. Like, I would say no. Like, I put a late draftable grade on you so we could watch you in the room and everyone else could see you, because that's how we did it. We only watched draftable players. I'm like, listen, I put a 7th round grade on you, Ross, because I wanted the room to see you and be familiar with you. But we probably want you more as a free agent, right? Like, I'm going to shoot you straight. I'm not going to BS you. That's where we see you. So then when your phone is ringing off the hook after the draft, like, there's a relationship there. Like, I wanted the players to trust me. Like, there was sincere interest. I hope they felt it from me. You know, I did a lot of follow-ups with these guys. And so then when I did call them, you know, right after the draft or at the end of the 7th round, like, Ross, we want you in Seattle. Let's go. And again, someone hopefully someday, whether it's NFL Films or 30 for 30, they have to be in like 10 different draft rooms, or even like 5 different, and like do that Wall Street, because it's like Wall Street. It is chaos. Like, the league has not figured out this undrafted free agency process at all. So, I mean, there are literally like, I mean, everyone's working phones. You got position coaches, scouts, the cap guys managing the money. Like, it would be awesome TV if someone ever did it. But yeah, I agree with you. Back to your original point, man. Like, the relationship of the schools and what you get from those people, you have to trust it.
So who's typically, like, it's so funny. It's so funny, Jim, because I have like all these questions to ask you, right? About like different positions for the draft and this guy and that guy. But I got to be honest with you, like, I have other people that I've been asking about every, like, I have Emery Hunt for the College Draft Podcast. I go through every guy with Greg Cosell. And not that you're not better than them, because you're fantastic, but you've actually done it, right? So the stuff that's so interesting to me about you is the unbelievable job you've done with the Senior Bowl. But also, like, who would be the typically the best person at a college to talk to? Was it like an assistant coach? Was it, you know, the scouting person, you know, that wants to get into the NFL? Like, they really want to get into the NFL. Like, that's what, like, their goal is to be an NFL GM, but they're the recruiting assistant at Georgia or something. In my mind, they're the one probably most likely to tell you the truth, because they're looking for a job from you someday.
Well, okay, I'll try to do this, not be long-winded with this. I mean, there's different reasons to go to different people. They all see these players through a different lens, right? So, like, one source that when I started scouting we didn't talk to were the academic people. They've become great resources for NFL scouts, because they see the players through an entirely different lens. And let's be honest, most players, most kids in general, like, not many people love school, right? Like, there's not a lot of people love going to school. So, again, that's hard, you know, with the NFL. And again, a lot of players don't love practice, do they? A lot of, you know, like, there's a lot of players that don't love the weight room. So, like, the academic people, how did this guy work through something that he didn't really like to do? You know, like, players love to play on Saturdays and Sundays and Friday nights when you're a high school guy, but you don't. So they've become a really good source, you know, especially on the learning front. Like, some guys learn football a certain way, but, like, how do they learn in the classroom? What special needs or accommodations did you need to get this guy to perform academically? So they've become a good source. Your point about, like, the young recruiting assistants or meet GAs, like, you get the GAs, because the GAs are guys that usually played, right? They're usually former players, and they're young enough that some of these GAs are going out and having beers with these guys after games, and they kind of know these guys' social habits a little bit. So, you know, you tap into that. And again, the GAs want to be, you know, they want to step up too. So those guys are good sources. I think when you really want to talk about the football intelligence of a guy, you got to go to the position coach, you know, the guy that he's in the room every day. You know, how is he in the room? How does he take notes? How does he learn? Is he a leader in your room? How do the other guys view him? Those guys are great sources. And then I will say the worst sources are the head coaches. You know, I've heard Nick Saban say, nobody comes to me and asks me about these players. I never felt that it was, I always felt like I was putting the head coach in a position that he shouldn't be in. You know, like, the head coach is the one that went into Ross Tucker's, you know, house and told his mom and dad, like, you know, whoever raises these kids, right? You know, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, whoever raised the guys, I'm going to grow your boy up to be a man in 4 or 5 years. And he's going to leave our building a better person. When you do that, I feel like you can't dish dirt on the kid. Now, like, you can't be completely transparent on a player. That's not your job. That's every other person in the building's job, not the head coach. So I rarely used to go to head coaches other than to thank them for letting me in the building that day and giving me access to his staff and the players. But bad story. But back to your point, like, to me, people in the cafeteria, the custodians, the equipment guys, if you want to know, like, how high maintenance a guy is, find the equipment guy. You know, like, it's like, are you old enough to remember the Breakfast Club movie?
Yeah.
So remember the custodian, he said he was the eyes and ears of the institution. I feel like the equipment guys are the eyes and the ears of the football operation. Like, they hear everything. They see everything. They know who leaves their crap, their locker messy. They know who, you know, helps pick up after other guys. They know who wants to be spatted every week. They want to know who wants the special towels. Like, so if you're trying to drill down on that piece, so they all serve a different purpose. But that's why you got to go into these buildings so much and so frequently, because you need those relationships.
Man, I love conversations like this where I have like 10 different things going through my head at the same time. I got to tell you, Jim, I feel like the academic piece is really important. Like the guys that make it a point to graduate or get a good GPA, it's like they see the big picture in life, right? Like they know football is not going to last forever. They take what they do seriously. They made sure they graduate. They have a 3.5 and a decent major. I know it's not as important as the football stuff, but man, I would like guys that graduate. I would like guys that had pretty good GPA. Of course, like anybody else in life, I'm biased. I'm a Princeton guy, whatever. But I just think it's, I don't care about what school they went to necessarily. It's just their approach as human beings to life.
100%. 100%, Ross. I think that I think you nailed it. I mean, it shows a level of accountability. It shows a level of pride in your work, whatever you do, right? If you slack off and do the bare minimum and you go into the academic person and they're like, man, this guy is borderline all the time. It's always a race to the finish at the end of every semester to get this guy eligible. You know, he doesn't show up for study hall. He's a pain in the butt for his tutors. Like, to me, that speaks volumes. If you're kind of a fringy guy and you're happy with like the bare minimum, man, at some point in your NFL career, you might bust your ass your rookie year to prove yourself. You're going to slide back usually in most cases to what you are. I think if you hold yourself to a high standard in your life, that should permeate kind of all areas. So I'm with you there.
You know, it might have changed in recent years, Jim, but I know for a long time, the Bengals, they probably still do, had the smallest scouting staff in the NFL, right? And they probably still do. I mean, I see some of these teams have like 20 guys, and and I always watch the Bengals, and maybe I'm not giving them enough credit, but like their draft, it always seems like, Jim, they just draft the guy who was ranked highest on like the best available guys still on the board and was supposed to go earlier, but didn't go yet. They just take him, and guess what? They've had a lot of good drafts. Like, they've had a lot of good players and a lot of good drafts. So I guess my question is, and maybe you'll tell me that I'm way off on the Bengals, but I guess I feel like sometimes maybe all of the digging, and I'm not denigrating the work that you put in other people, but maybe all of that digging, maybe all of the expense, maybe all of that time, can you argue at times it's over, and you're going to miss on some guys because of the off the field stuff or the character stuff, but it just seems like the Bengals always take the guy that was supposed to go 12th, but he's there at 24 and they take him. And a lot of times he's good.
Okay. We need to unpack this carefully. I would have agreed with you on the Bengals thing years ago. I think I'll single out a couple. I think Mike Duke Tobin at the top, and then Mike Potts, Trey Brown. They do still have a small staff. I think they do a really good job there. I think their drafts have changed. I don't think they're what you were saying. I agree with you to a point. I think what used to happen back, at least this was my old observance from afar, was that they took a lot of character risks. And that's why you would see a guy that's still sticking out there as Mel's top guy. He was Mel's top guy for a reason, is because all these other teams put in a lot of homework on the guy and there was issues, right? And I think, you know, you can go back in there, you know, the Vontaze Burfict, and, you know, there's been guys.
Mixon?
Yep. I mean, there's you know, where did Pac-Man go out of college at West Virginia? Titans.
But Chris Henry went to the Bengals.
Yeah, so I mean, those are the kinds of guys that I think the Bengals used to take chances on. And a lot of times they were rewarded for it. A lot of times those guys were really good players. No, I think they're really doing a good job now. I think the guys I mentioned specifically, and some of the younger guys I don't know as well, but I think that franchise has done a really good job the last few years.
Man, I could ask you a million questions, Jim. I'll just do one more, okay? We talk all the time about the first round guys, blah, 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 blah. Everybody talks about them. You're the one, because of the Senior Bowl and the unbelievable success you guys have had with guys getting drafted in the first 2 days and all that, and just getting drafted in general, you're the one that actually knows the depth of the draft in the middle round. So we know which guys are supposed to go in the first round. Where is the depth in the middle rounds where it's like, boy, they might wait because you can still get a pretty good guy in the third, fourth round in that position that might be able to play for you this year?
I'd start at corner. I think going into Senior Bowl, I think there was a perception this wasn't a great corner draft. And I think a lot of guys performed really well here in Mobile. And I think that, you know, and then they went and tested well at the combine. So I think where we're sitting right now, 3 weeks out, you know, 2-3 weeks out here, that the league feels really good about this corner draft. There's some depth there now, man. I mean, up at the top, I mean, you got Quinion Mitchell, who was in our game. He'll probably be the top guy to go. He or Terrion Arnold from Alabama. But I think you're going to see a run in that third and fourth round area. There's going to be starting corners sitting there in the fourth round that are good football players. Like, you know, a guy you probably did up there in the Northeast, Elijah Jones at Boston College. The more I've watched Elijah, I mean, he's one of my favorite guys in this draft now. So I would say corner. Everyone knows that everyone's waiting on running backs now. These teams are just waiting on running backs. They're devalued. I mean, I think everyone's heard that narrative. But there's some good backs in this draft that are going to be there fourth, fifth round. I put a post out recently about the kid at Marshall, Rasheen Ali. I mean, you dig into that guy's tape. I mean, he's a dynamic football player, man. So, I mean, teams are going to wait on running backs, and they're going to wait. They're going to get a good one. So corner, running back. To me, those are – and everyone knows the depth of the wideout class. To me, those two stand out.
Check him out on social media. He's the man. Does an unbelievable job of running the Senior Bowl, which is the Super Bowl of the pre-draft process. See how I did that, Jim? @JimNagy_SB. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Ross, good to do it, man. Thanks.
Man, that conversation went a very different way than I thought it was going to, but that was awesome. That was unique. You can hear people talking about the players everywhere. I hope you guys enjoy getting a chance to actually hear a little bit more about the scouting process and what those guys do and how they try to get information that's valuable for their team. I thought that was really cool. Hopefully you did as well. You know what else is really cool? Labatt Blue Light. I love taking my time to the next level, whether it's a sporting event, friends, family, just by drinking some Labatt Blue Lights, living life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA. Buffalo, New York.
Tux Takes.
All right, Ross. The Browns, their running back Nick Chubb, he took a restructured deal with Cleveland, and then they also traded offensive lineman Leroy Watson to the Tennessee Titans for a 7th-round pick.
So the Leroy Watson thing, I got to be honest, I never heard of the guy. But pretty clearly, Bill Callahan, the offensive line coach who went from Cleveland to Tennessee to be with his son, he likes Leroy Watson, said, I think that guy can play for us. Let's get him. They traded a 7th-round pick for him. The other thing, the Chubb thing, I'm going to make my meaty Monday. Presented by GoodRanchers.com, America's best meat delivered to your door. Use code ROSS for 15% off. A better way to buy meat at GoodRanchers.com. I don't blame the Cleveland Browns for asking Nick Chubb to take a pay cut after that knee injury. I don't blame Nick Chubb for accepting it. I just want everybody, including you, to remember this the next time a player holds out. This is just business, right, for the Browns. They're protecting their salary cap. They're protecting the money that they were going to pay Chubb this year. I get it. Just remember that when players are protecting their interests and their families and their financial security. Thank you.
Probably the biggest news from the weekend, Hall of Famer running back O.J. Simpson died at the age of 76.
Don't really know what to say. A terrific, terrific football player that I think most logical human beings believe was guilty of murder. And yeah, let's move on.
Bunch of signings around the league. Eagles signed tight end CJ Uzama. Rams signed linebacker Troy Reader. Niners signed cornerback Rocky Sin. Giants signed defensive lineman Jordan Phillips. Seahawks signed Laken Tomlinson. And the Ravens signed wide receiver Deontay Hardy.
It's this time of year, Jack, I might even write about this in my column for the 33rd team this week. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. But it's like baseline veteran signing week, right? This week and next, You want to get a guy that gives you a floor at the position in case the draft doesn't go the way you want it to, right? You don't want to feel like you have to take a player at a certain position. Makes a lot of sense. And these guys want to make sure they have jobs before the draft where teams draft over them. Makes sense, really, for both sides. College draft, epic today. I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out MyFrontPageStory.com. Less than a month until Mother's Day. Moms are the greatest thing that there's ever been or ever will be. Give them the greatest gift they could ever get. MyFrontPageStory.com. BackOfficeScheduler.com, SteakhouseSports.com, HumanHeadNYC.com, Sporticulture, Pizza Boy Brewing.